Okay, we. Well, I'll show my screen in a moment. Before we, right after we start, we for many months, many of us were kicked out of shul because of coronavirus, and it's a time to mechazik ourselves, to strengthen ourselves in appreciating the kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses, the shul, appreciating what goes into a shul, how we approach a shul, and this evening I'd like to discuss the history and halacha of the mechitza, the humble mechitza, and where it came from, this history in Europe and in America, and what the poskim have to say about the mechitza and how we relate to the mechitza in light of how we relate to the shul as well. I'm going to share the screen only for one source, and that's the central source, and then I'm going to take the screen away. But what we really need to see to begin the discussion of the mechitza is a Gemara here in Maseches Sukkah. This is a Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Aleph Amud Aleph, and we'll read the Gemara and the Mishnah, and then we'll turn to what the poskim have to say. We have a Mishnah here in the end of Sukkah, and the Mishnah says, Mishlo Raz Simchas Pesach HaShoeva, whoever has not seen the Simchas Pesach HaShoeva, the celebration on Sukkot in the Beis HaMikdash, Lo Raz Simcha Miyamav, they have not seen rejoicing in their lives. Ubemotze Yom Tov Rishon Shalchag, after the first sign of Sukkot, Yaridu LeEzras Nashim, they went down to the Ezras Nashim, Umaskinan Sham Tikun Gadol, and they made a great fixing. Now, it's a bit vague. What is this great fixing? What did they do on the night of Simchas Pesach HaShoeva? So if we turn the page of the Gemara and we go to the bottom over here, so the Gemara says on the bottom of Nun Aleph, my tikkun gadol, what was this great tikkun that they made? Amar Rebbe Elazar Oleo says, Bosu Shishaninu Chelka Haisa B'Rishona V'Hikufa Gezustera V'Skinu Shayu Nashim Yoshios Milmala V'Nashim Milmata. What happened was is that they set up in the Beis HaMikdash a place for the woman to go above, and essentially a balcony for the women to sit above the men in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Barishona hayu nashim bifnim v'nashim v'chutz. Originally, they didn't have a balcony. What they had was the women on the inside, the men on the outside. Vayubayim l'day kalas rush, and the men and the women would fraternize and shmooze in the Beis HaMikdash. Hiskinu shayu nashim yoshvos v'chutz v'nashim bifnim. So they moved the women to the outside, the men to the inside of the courtyard. They also came to shmooze and to fraternize in the Beis HaMikdash. So they had established that the men and women can't be too close to each other, so they put the women on a balcony, the men on the bottom floor, and that's how they solved the issue of behaving appropriately in the Beis HaMikdash. Heichi avid hachi, says the Gemara, how could they do such a thing? V'haksiv hakol b'ksav miyad Hashem elai hiskil. The Navi says that everything that went into the Beis HaMikdash was done with the Nevuah and the command of Hashem. How can they simply go and change the construction of the Beis HaMikdash based on how they feel? Where did they get the idea to go and mess around with the plans of the Beis HaMikdash? Amar Rav, Kra Eshkechu, the Darish. They found a Pasuk and they explained the Pasuk to show the source to mandate the separation of men and women in the Beis HaMikdash. What is the source? V'safda aretz mishpachos, mishpachos, levad, mishpachos, beis david, levad, v'neshem, levad. The Navi says that at a certain point in the future, there will be the death of Mashiach ben Yosef. Or according to some versions, either the Yitzhahara, there's going to be the death of Mashiach ben Yosef. And by the eulogies of Mashiach ben Yosef, they will sit mishpachos, levad, mishpachos, levad. The men on one side, the women on the other side. Amru, and they said, this is the pasuk, that by the eulogies of Mashiach ben Yosef, the men and the women will sit separately. V'halo dvarim kal v'chomer, is this not obvious? U'mala asid lavo, in the future, she'oskin behesped, in the future when they're giving eulogies, v'ein yitzahara sholet behem, and there will not be a yitzahara in the days of Mashiach. As we hear from Chazal, Amra Torah, nevertheless, we have a statement, and again, it uses the word Torah here, even though it's the Navi, we'll discuss this in a moment. Anashim Levad, Venashim Levad, and then they separate men and women. Achshav She'asukim B'Simcha, now, by the Simcha Beis HaShoeva, where there's a Simcha, and there's rejoicing, and there could be frivolity. V'Yitzahara Shelebehem, and the Yitzahara is present. Alachas Kama V'Kama, how much more so one would need to have separations between men and women to make sure that people are behaving properly. And this is the Gemara here in Sukkah, and this is the source of our discussion this evening. So let's launched into the discussion. We have a lot to say and a lot of different sources. Now, let's begin with a comment from Rav Kook. Rav Kook writes in the Tshuvas in Orach Mishpat and Siman Lamed Hey that the gezuster, the balcony, existed all year round. Don't think they went and built a balcony just for the Simchas Pesach Shoeva. The tikkun gadol, the great fixing they would do by Sukkos, is when they would go and fix it up so it would be even better at providing tznius, because of the overflow of the people and the higher level of simcha, they would go and do any fixing up needed by Motzei Yom Tov. Now, based on this Gemara, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who we will spend a lot of time with this evening, writes in Arachaim L'Chelek Aleph, in his Shuvas Igros Moshe, which we have over here. The main Shuvas are going to be found here in volume 1 of the Igros Moshe. And he learns that the separating of men and women during davening with a mechitz is a din d'oraisa, a Torah-level commandment. It is true that these psukim are from the Nevi'im and not from the Torah, but nevertheless, it is still men ha-Torah. We know that a Navi does not have permission to be mechadish, to make up new laws that are not in the Torah. And therefore, when a Navi states a halacha that wasn't found in the Torah directly, he's simply coming to clarify and to reveal that this was the Ratzon HaTorah, this is the will of the Torah from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. So mechitzah, says Rav Moshe, is a Torah commandment. However, Rabbi Soloveitchik has a letter that we're going to return to in a moment in a book called The Sanctity of the Synagogue, where he argues that the separation between men and women is min ha-Torah, but building a mechitza, building a wall to actually concretize that separation, is a derabbanan. It is a fulfillment of asu sayag the Torah, to make a fence, literally here in this case, to protect the Torah. Now, on a level that is more pinimi, on a deeper, more Kabbalistic level, the Chassam Sofer writes in the Tshuvas in Choshen Mishpat and Simen Kuf Tzadi, and he explains that we believe that any tefillah that is mixed with improper machshavos, improper thoughts, even about one's own spouse, will not be totally accepted before Hashem. And therefore, we separate men and women during davening so that each one doesn't have hirhurim, improper thoughts during tefillah, and that the tefillah should be accepted in Shemayim. We see that families are separated in the above description in the Hespedim that we spoke about a moment ago, and that the husband and the wife didn't sit together. Any bittul of kavana, any removal of proper kavana, is considered something that we want to avoid to the Sam Sofer, and therefore there are mechitzas, we separate men and women in shul. Now, amongst the mefarshim, there is a great discussion over here. Just one comment before we continue. In the Siach Yitzchak, which is a parish on the Siddur of the Gra, in the Siddur Isha Yisrael, so he says that he heard in the name of Echiel Heller that the whole issue here of having a mechitza and this tikkun gadol by the Beis HaMikdash is why we say in the Musaf of Yom Tov, V'hareinu b'vinyano, v'samcheinu b'sikuno, that we will see its rebuilding and we will rejoice in its tikkun. We are saying that we will rejoice in the future Beis HaMikdash when the Ezras Nashim there will be rebuilt. That's the tikkun that's in the Gemara, and it's the tikkun in our davening. Now, amongst the Mefarshim, there's a debate as to what is the purpose of the mechitza and what is it supposed to be. The Mishnah in Midos in Perek Beis says that the Ezras Nashim and the Beis HaMikdash, the women were above and the men were below, it's Kadei Shlo Yu Mu'uravim, that they shouldn't mix with one another. There shouldn't be Kalus Rush, there shouldn't be too much schmoozing. The Rambam in Hilchas Lulav, Paraches, says the same thing. The Ezras Nashim, Ishlo Yis'arvu Elu Imelu, they shouldn't mix together. However, the same Rambam in the Parish of Mishnah and Sukkah writes that the issue is that the men shouldn't see the women. Kadei Shlo Yistaklu Anashim Anashim. Not mixing, but you shouldn't see one another during davening. Or at least the men not seeing the women. And this is Said LaHalacha by the Tosfos Yom Tov in Mishnah Sukkah, the Tosfos HaRosh in Sanhedrin, the Mordechai, the Meiri in Sukkah as well. Now, remember this Machlokas. This Machlokas is very important, because it's going to play a big role in how we construct the mechitza very soon. Now let's turn to the history part. The earliest halachic discussion, I'm being very careful here, the earliest halachic discussion that we have about the necessity of mechitza and the problem of there not being a mechitza is in 1865. Now, before we get to the halacha, you should be aware that the discussion about the removal of mechitza goes back at least 50 years before then. We have a report in 1815 of a recorded removal of mechitza in a minyan in a house, and we also have the recorded removal of mechitza from a shul, both in Berlin in 1845. If you want to know more about the history and the non-halachic perspective on the removal of mechitza, Professor Jonathan Sarna has an article called The Debate Over Mixed Seating in the American Synagogue, and there he discusses the particulars from the non-halachic perspective. But we're learning halach this evening, so let's start with the halachic perspective. In 1865, a well-known Hungarian rabbi named Rav Hillel Lichtenstein, or Rav Hillel of Kolomei, called for a petition against a certain rabbinical seminary that he thought was teaching people improperly, and he does so through the means of a conference that would show the united opposition of Hungarian rabbanim. And the conference was held in the city of Mihlovich with 24 rabbis, and there was a document that was passed, and 71 rabbis signed on the document, and this was known as the Psak of Mihlovich. And it said that it is usher to give a drasha in your vernacular, to enter a shul that has a bima in the middle, and to enter a shul that has a spire like a church, or to wear canonicals, the fancy clothing that the Protestant ministers would wear, and for our discussion here, that a machitza may not be touched. So we see already in the halachic writings, or the Torah writings of 1865, there was already a push about not removing the machitzas. Soon after, 2 years later, 3 years later, 12 or 13 years later, the Maharam Shik, the famed Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, writes in Orach Chaim Siman Ayin Zal, a year before his death, that he was asked about some people in a community who wanted to remove the usual separation between the men's section and the Ezra's Nashim and replace it with something less formidable. And he responded to his student that he should fight against these Rishayim who are being Purish min HaKal, separating from the Tzibur. It is a din that there must be a hefsek, a separation between the Ezra's Nashim and the Ezra's Nashim, as we have in the Beis HaMikdash. And other Hungarian Rabbanim as well would begin to write about this new concept of people removing mechitzas. This includes the Tshuvas Zichron Yehuda, and later on in our days, the Minchas Yisach Dayan Weiss, already writing about this issue of removing the mechitza. Now, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, the famed posek of Shari Tzadik Haspa, has a tshuva in Chelek Zayin. And in a letter to his brother, Rav Nachum Waldenberg, his brother wondered why the issue of the height of the mechitza, or having a mechitza, is only raised in the 1800s. There's no mention of mechitzas in the Rambam, there's no mention of mechitzas in the Gemara, there's barely a mention of mechitzas in the Shulchan Aruch. Why is there no mention of mechitzas until we come to the 1800s? Why is this a new topic in Jewish history? So the Tzitz Eliezer explains that the issue never existed until relatively modern times, because all shuls were made where there was essentially a wall between the Beis HaKnesses and the Ezra's Nashim. Look in the Kolba, one of the Rishonim, who refers to the Beis HaKnesses of the men and the Beis HaKnesses of the Nashim. It's as if there was almost two separate spaces. There was never a question about how the mechitza should look, because the women sat in a separate room with perhaps maybe a small window, or they sat maybe in a balcony. But mechitzas didn't exist. It didn't occur to anybody. There's another approach as well. Rav Gedalia Felder, the famed Rav in Taranto, in his Yisod Yeshurin, in his Perish on the Siddur. So he suggests that there was no reason for the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch to mention the need of a separation between men and women during davening, because it was such an obvious fact to all Jews. Both Batei Migdash had Ezra's Nashim. So why would it occur to any Jew that men and women shouldn't be separated during tefillah? Of course they should be. It's obvious. It doesn't need to be discussed in the Shulchan Aruch. So those are the earliest mentionings of mechitza in Europe. Let's fast forward to America. As Reform and Conservative Judaism made their way in America, the battle of mechitzas began to take shape. Now, much of the earliest discussion are found in that historical work, but halachically, regarding what the Torah discussions, are found in Rabbi Rakefet's book, his biography of Bernard Revel. And here, on page 163 to 165, he discusses the great issue in this dividing line, you know, pun intended, between JTS and YU in the 1920s and 1930s. He records a graduate of JTS writing, "I do believe that men and women should be sitting together. I do believe in the children sitting with the parents. No, the family that prays together stays together." This old comment. And he goes on to show as well, this was clearly the dividing line between JTS and Yeshiva University in the 1920s and early 1930s, whether there would be a mechitza in the shul. Orthodox smicha students could only go to congregations if they accepted the positions of installing a mechitza, or if the rabbi felt that he could convince the shul to install mechitza within the year, or maybe a little bit more. Rabbi Revel told the musmachim of YU that they had 1 year to get a mechitza installed, or else you had to leave the shul. And if a YU graduate refused to leave a shul that wouldn't put in a mechitza, they would revoke his smicha, as it happened a number of times. Now, at this time as well, we'll go to Eretz Yisrael for a moment, Rav Kook, in the above tshuva in the Orach Mishpat, was writing to Jews in America. And he explains to the Jews of America that a shul is supposed to be a place of kedusha, of holiness. It is supposed to be representation of the Beis HaMikdash, a mikdash ma'at, a small Beis HaMikdash. It is supposed to be a place where we ask Hashem to move the scales of chova, of din, to the scales of zechuyos, of merit. And by davening in such a place without a mechitza, we are undermining the kedushas Beis HaKnesses. In such a makam kadosh, we should be distant from the Yetzer Hara. We should not have the slightest connection to anything related to the Yetzer Hara. Rav Shechter has a similar piece as well, in line with Rav Cook. He doesn't quote Rav Cook, but Rav Shechter writes in the Eretz HaTzvi, and he says that we know from the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Mem Zayin, that Kimchis, this great tzaddikas, merited to have 7 sons who served as the Kohen Gadol because of her level of tznius, her modesty. Rav Shechter writes that we see that tznius, modesty, connects to Hashras Hashchina, to having a connection with Hashem, a more intimate connection with Hashem. The Beis HaKnesses is a mikdash ma'at, therefore it requires more tznius than regular place. Maybe in other places we do sit together mixed men and women, but in this holiest of places, where there's Hashras Hashchina, Hashem's present, we require the highest levels of tznius and modesty. Later in the 1950s, the issue of mechitza would actually become a national event, recorded by a Mr. Baruch Litvin in the Sanctity of the Synagogue. They used to give out a copy of the Sanctity of the Synagogue to all the musmachim in YU upon receiving by the Chag HaSmicha. I think my year was the first year they stopped giving it out. I don't know why. But this book tells a fascinating tale. In the Michigan Supreme Court, they ended a 4-year dispute involving congregation based Tefillas Moshe in the Mount Clemens neighborhood of Michigan, when it voted unanimously to forbid mixed seating during religious services at the synagogue. The mixed seating controversy raged at the Mount Clemens synagogue since 1954 for 4 years, when the original vote for seating men and women together was rejected. In 1955, there was a committee reporting to this congregation in favor of mixed seating, and they had a resolution to adopt the majority to move this Orthodox shul to a mixed seating shul. An injunction issued prior to the Yom Noraim of that year restrained the congregation, and this was put into effect by Mr. Baruch Litvin, from effecting the change until the judge ruled when mixed seating was put into practice. And it went all the way up to the Michigan Supreme Court, and the Michigan Supreme Court said that the defendant board members had the opportunity to refute the test to refute Mr. Litvin and other witnesses to the plaintiffs, and they went back and forth, and the court concluded as follows: that the shul was an Orthodox shul. 1. 2, that Orthodox law, according to Orthodox law, Jews cannot participate in services with mixed seating. And 3, that if mixed seating was enjoyed in this congregation, Orthodox Jews would be prohibited from participating in their services. Now, Baruch Litvin won the case, but he lost the shul, because every single member of the shul left and started a new shul. So he was essentially left, you know, $12,000 in the hole for all the legal fees, and I think maybe they had to pay him back, and they all left, and he lost the whole shul. But in principle, he won by essentially putting on the books that Orthodox congregations have mechitzas. He wrote the whole thing up, the whole back and forth, with all the letters of the amicus briefs and all the different letters written by Rabbanim to support him in this book called Sanctity of the Synagogue. Also as well, I forgot to bring it to the screen here, but in the biography of Rabbi Moshe Sher, he discusses the Agudas Yisrael's involvement as well, and Rabbi Sher would be involved in another case in the 1950s with a chazan in Philadelphia who sued a shul that removed the mechitza, and he won $2,000 in court. This is recorded in the Musaf Shabbos Kodesh, the insert for the Ated Ne'aman in Eretz Yisrael and Parshas Miketz in Tafshin and Ches, based on an article that Rabbi Sher wrote in Das Yiddish Avartz in 1954. Now, for example, from the book by Baruch Litvin, Rabbi Salvechik wrote that prayer means communion with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore withdrawal from all and everything else. And clearly the presence of women among men or men among women, which often evokes a certain frivolity in the group, either in spirit or in behavior, can contribute little to the sanctification or the deepening of religious feeling, nor can it help instill the mood in which a man must be immersed when he would communicate with the Almighty as well. Now, this idea from Rabbi Soloveitchik that the important thing to have in mechitza is that you can focus only on Hashem and nobody else, even your family, is elaborated more by Rabbi Lam. Rabbi Lam wrote an article in Tradition, Volume 1, Number 2, and it was published as a separate article over here. I have this old edition over here from Rabbi Lam. Rabbi Lam elaborates on this point as well in his article called Separate Pews in the Synagogue, A Social and Psychological Approach. We know that Rabbi Soloveitchik did not allow davening in the shul without a mechitza, even if one was going to miss tekiya shofar. That's how far he went. In the 1960s, when Rabbi Soloveitchik's brother, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, became the Rosh Yeshiva in Skokie in Chicago, he fought hard against the pre-existing policy in Skokie Yeshiva, where musmachim from Skokie would go to shuls that did not have mechitzas. And he required all smicha students from Skokie to sign an agreement that they would not accept a pulpit without a mechitza. Apparently, there was already a pre-existing policy from a past Rosh Yeshiva that allowed it, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was not a fan. And if they broke their word, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik would contact the synagogue and inform them that their new hire was not an honest person, and he would rat out this rabbi. This is recorded in the biography of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik by his son Yeled Shashuim. And several times he records that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik found himself in shuls with less than satisfactory mechitzos. Once he was stranded in Iowa for Shabbos in a shul that didn't have a mechitza, so he made a mechitza by tying a talus to a coat rack. And the members of the shul were so inspired by Rav Aaron that they decided to install a permanent mechitza after that Shabbos. Now, with this in mind, and all of this background, and we're only, 21 minutes in, so we can now appreciate the famous tshuva of the Igros Moshe in Or HaChaim Chelek Aleph for the first volume in Simen Lamed Tes. It's a lengthy tshuva. It's a number of pages in the Igros Moshe. And here, this is written in 1956. Rav Moshe argues that the purpose of the mechitza is to separate men and women from kalus rosh, from being frivolous. The Gemara Brachos Daf Lamed Aleph says that we may not daven from Kalas Rosh being frivolous. The Gemara in Megillah says that in Shul we may not have Kalas Rosh. And in Rav Moshe's opinion, it is ideal to have a balcony for the women, as this creates the most separation. However, if this cannot be done, then you must have a mechitza that prevents Kalas Rosh being frivolous, but not histakless. It's the issue, says Rav Moshe, is not looking at the women. It is rather simply having a separation from the women. A mechitza that's 10 tefachim, that works for Shabbos, that many of us learned about in Erevin a couple of months ago, that's not sufficient for shul, since it won't prevent mingling between men and women. If the men and women can speak over the mechitza, there's no greater frivolity than this. And therefore, it is sufficient to have a mechitza that goes until the shoulders, because we are not interested in preventing the women from seeing the men and vice versa. In fact, we have no indication that the Ezra's Nashon and the Beis HaMikdash had walls around the balcony. It is very likely that the men who weren't standing under the Ezra's Nashon could see the women of the balcony, but they couldn't speak with one another. There are many shuls, in this community included, where you can see the women to the Ezra's Nashon, even though you definitely cannot, you're not next to one another. And even though the Rambam writes in the Parash of Mishnayos that the point of the Ezra's Nashon was to prevent his sockless looking, this doesn't override the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah carries more weight than the Rambam in the commentary on the Mishnah. And therefore, Moshe writes that the mechitza needs to be 3 amos or 18 tefachim tall. Now, we'll get to the measurements in a moment, what that means in English. It is true that you can see the head of someone if the mechitza is 18 tefachim, but it will still prevent kalas rosh. And those who want to be machmer and have a higher mechitza, so that you can't see one another, then tavo leim bracha, says Rav Moshe, more the merrier. And that's certainly the right thing to do. But if you don't want to have that, then it's perfectly fine having mechitza that's at shoulder height. Especially, says Rav Moshe, by the way, it's good to have a higher mechitza because many women in America don't cover their hair. And it's a problem for a man to daven in front of a woman whose hair is not covered. Although, he does cite the Aruch HaShulchan, one of the very few times that Rav Moshe does cite an acharon in the Igros Moshe, that nowadays it could be that uncovered hair is not erva, it's not considered to be improper to look at, and it wouldn't prevent a man from davening in front of it. You said women still have to cover their hair, but it wouldn't prevent a man from looking at a woman while davening. Now, if the mechitza is less than 18 tefachim, says Rav Moshe, it is usher to daven in such a shul, and one should protest. And Rav Moshe repeats the same yesodos in the next tshuva, in Simen Mem Beis, where he says that if the women don't dress tzanua for shul, you have to make sure the mechitza covers the line of sight for the men's section. And that is how Rav Moshe writes this in his famous tshuva. Now, what about the measurements halacha l'maisa? So Rav Moshe's a tshuva in the same volume in Simen Kuf Lamed Vav, where he explains how all this converts in inches. Rav Moshe says that one amma is between 21 and a quarter and 24 inches. And therefore, a mechitza, technically according to this calculation, should be between 63.75 and 72 inches, or, 5 feet and 4 inches, or in 6 feet. However, in Chelek Gimel of Igros Moshe Orachaim Simen Chaf Gimel, Rav Moshe explicitly says that the mechitza should be 60 inches or 5 feet. And that's how we come out, 60 inches or 5 feet. Incidentally, there is a recording brought in an article in Tradition in Volume 22, the Rabbi Salvation says the mechitza could be 50 inches. But that is not the minhag in most places. That is considered a very, very short mechitza. We try to follow Rav Moshe in this regard to have it at least to be 60 inches and 5 feet. Now, the next tshuva in Simen Mem, Rav Moshe continues to explain that the point of the mechitza is not to prevent histakless looking. If we wanted to prevent looking, then we wouldn't let men and women see each other all the time in public. The purpose of a mechitza is meant to prevent kalas rosh, frivolity, and if a man wants to look at a woman, we're not responsible for his actions. Now, this is not in line. Let's note that this is not in line with Rav Kook and Rav Shechter's approach. They felt that it's a special din in the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses, not just the looking. And therefore, they could argue that, well, it's true, I can't prevent a man from staring at a woman, but in a shul, you need to be extra careful because of the holiness of the shul. Okay. In Or HaChaim Chelek Dalet, Siman Lamed Aleph, Rav Moshe addresses another issue common in American shuls. He was asked about a women's section that was raised. They raised the floor of the women's section. So on the men's side, the mechitza was 70 inches. But if you're sitting on the women's side, the mechitza was only 30 inches. So he says, I'm not such a fan. The mechitza should be 60 inches. And in Chelek Gimel and Simen Chaf Gimel, he's dealing with the woman's section that was raised 12 inches, and he says, I'm not happy with it, but he says, it's not Asr Medina. Ideally, you want to have that it should be 60 inches, whether you're setting the women's section or the men's section. Now, based on the Igros Moshe, it seems that a mechitza made of glass could also fulfill the din. It's not preventing men and women from looking, but a glass mechitza is sufficient to prevent intermingling of men and women, and therefore should be valid. In fact, Rav Moshe himself discusses the possibility of a mechitza made of glass in Chelek Aleph and Simen Mem Gimel. There's a lot of shuvas in the Igros Moshe about mechitzas. And he refers to a mechitza, which is only the top third glass, not the whole thing glass, just the top third. And he argues that it's certainly permissible, and such a mechitza will raise issues of tznius when women come to shul not dressed properly. And this could cause a problem for men who can see the women, who will make it, they'll feel that will not be able to daven freely if people are not dressed modestly. And he adds that perhaps a one-way mirror would be the best thing, so that the men cannot see the women, but the women can still see the men. And he says, Rav Menashe Klein says, this is acceptable to have a one-way mirror in Chelek Zion, in the Mishnah Halachos, and Rav Moshe or Achaim Chelek Dalad in Simen Chavtes, he disapproves of mechitzas where the top part is made of a lattice work, where it's like mixed together like this, and he recommends that a curtain should be hung over it, and he writes that some are lenient if the gaps are less than 3 inches, but he says lattice work is not good for B'nai Torah. In Or HaChaim Chelek Dalet Simen Lamed Beis, he's lenient that the lattice in the mechitza is only if it has holes small enough which don't allow conversing between men and women, provided that, again, has the right height of 5 feet. Now, again, Rav Moshe views the issue of the mechitza of not intermingling, not having kalas rosh. However, not everyone agrees with Rav Moshe's understanding. Many poskim felt that the mechitza is meant to prevent men and women from seeing one another during tefillah. The Chazon Ish has a letter, which is recorded in the Sefer Maisa Ish in Chelekei on page 124, where he says it's usur to daven in a shul where the men and women can see one another. But most famously, and most with the most controversy, is the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav is a tshuv in Vayol Moshe, in Chelek Aleph and Simen Yud. He was extremely bothered by the tshuva of Rav Moshe, and he calls Rav Moshe out by name. And he says, concerning the mechitza permitted by Rav Moshe Feinstein, he says that such a mechitza is not sufficient even to prevent Kalas Rush, since men and women will be able to intermingle by speaking above the mechitza. Kalas Rush, says the Satmar Rav, depends first and foremost on their heads, not on their bodies. And beyond this, he says that the chiyuv to separate men and women is not out of concern of just intermingling, but also out of the possibility of men seeing the women. And this too, which he cites the Rambam, the Parashat Mishnayos, is a cause for it to be usur. Now, the Rambam also mentions the issue of Kalas Rush, and the Satmar Rav explains at length that if a person has improper thoughts that are caused from seeing the opposite gender, this is considered Kalas Rush, and the concern of men looking at women, which he says is usur midoraisa, is therefore sufficient to make a mechitza be above the head. And according to the Satmar Rav, it follows, this is a very long shuva, that of course the mechitza needs to prevent any possibility of men seeing women in shul, and it's pashut, it's obvious that a mechitza made of glass is entirely pasul. Now, the Satmar Rav explicitly argues against, there is one opinion that says that women may not see the men. The Satmar Rav says the minhag has always been that the women are allowed to see the men, but the men can't see the women. In support of his position, he mentions the famous letter of 1865 of Michlovich, signed by the 71 Hungarian Rabbanim, saying it's usher to enter into a shul where the men can see the women. Now, just a historical point. In the introduction to the eighth volume of the Igros Moshe, where the family writes the biography, on page 26, it says that the Satmar community caused Rav Moshe a lot of agabas nefesh, about two tshuvos. They made Rav Moshe miserable and caused him a lot of pain. One, most famously is Rav Moshe allowing IVF, and the other is the mechitzas. They drove Rav Moshe crazy, and they made him miserable over his stance on the mechitzas. Other poskim, predominantly Hungarian, sided with the Satmar Rav as well. We quoted before the Minchas Yitzchak, the Rav Vosner of the Shevet Halevi in Chelek Aleph, Rav Benasha Klein in the Mishnah Halachos Chelek Zayin, all write that the primary purpose of mechitza is to prevent men from seeing women, and only mechitza that is above the head is halachically valid. So we have here a machlokas of poskim. What are we supposed to do over here? So let's move a little bit more forward to the Sridi Yeshu of the Chilak of Weinberg, the famed last Rav in Berlin, the great Tzadik and Talmid Chacham, in his Tshuva Sridi Yeshu Chelek Beis in Simen Yud Dalet. He records a machlokas between Rav Moshe and the Satmar Rav. He says, I saw the Vayol Moshe, I saw the Igros Moshe, and says the Sridi Yeshu that he thinks Rav Moshe is more correct in his reasoning and his proofs. He hasn't seen a single tshuva that defeated any of the proofs and the logic of Rav Moshe Feinstein. In addition, men and women interact with one another all the time nowadays. They see each other all the time outside of shul. And seeing a woman in shul or a man in shul is not going to cause distraction. And he says that while stringency for the Hungarian position was worthy in the past, nowadays, if women stay home and they don't go to shul, and they feel that they don't have a safe place in shul for them to daven, or they feel they can be part of the davening, they will completely lose their Judaism, and therefore, it is usur to distance women from shul based on this chumrah. Again, you can't be more lenient than Rav Moshe, but it don't have to be, nor should one be machmer like the Hungarian opinion. The Yalkut Yosef in Simen Kuf Nun, and Rav Chaim David Alevi, the Rav of Tel Aviv, in his Asei L'Charav and Chela Gimel, say that the Ezros Nashim should be built so the men cannot see the women. So we still have Machlokas HaPoskim to this day. Rav Shechter has said in the past that L'Chachila we rely on Rav Moshe when it comes to the Eid of the Mechitza, and that is certainly the Minag in most of our communities. Now, that is the end of the discussion Halacha L'Maisa. We've traveled from the beginning of 1815 to nowadays, in the different shuls, but let's make it very, very contemporary, and we'll come to a tshuva that Rav Shechter wrote a couple of months ago in the midst of the, but we are still in the midst, but in the beginning of the times of the coronavirus. What about a mechitza that's not at a formal Beis HaKnesses? Now, just as a side note, I could have spent the evening discussing separations and walls and all different types of areas. Shiurim, at weddings, you know, events, things like that. But we only have so much time, so we kept the discussion tonight to mechitzas in shul for davening. We wanted to keep it tight. But let's step a little bit outside that rubric and discuss a mechitza when it's not a formal Beis HaKnesses. You have a minyan in your house. You have a minyan in the backyard. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Arachayim Chelek Hei in Simen Yud Beis. Now, a bit of a warning about this tshuva. This tshuva was not written by Rav Moshe. This was written at the end of Rav Moshe's life. It was dictated in Yiddish, and then it was written over in Hebrew, because Rav Moshe at that point was unable to write, and it was edited for grammar by his editors. So, not that the content, again, the volumes of Igros Moshe 8 and 9 are always considered to be a bit more controversial, not in Rav Moshe's own pen in many of the tshuvas. So we have to, I don't want to say take it with a grain of salt, but it is, you know, there's always a cloud of hesitation over those tshuvas. So Rav Moshe says that if you're davening in a base avel, in a house of mourning, and it's time for men to daven, then the women should go to another room. That's pashut. Rav Moshe sees no technical difference between a shul and any other public place that has been temporarily designated for tefillah. However, if a person is in a situation where the women will not go to another room, then it shouldn't stop anyone from davening, since this is not a permanent situation. On the other hand, at a wedding hall, says Rav Moshe, a wedding hall is not a place that has been designated for tefillah in any form. And therefore, Mikra Adin, the men can simply go to another part of the room in the wedding hall and daven there. Now, this differentiation is repeated in Gris Moshe or Yoredeya Chelek Dal Simen Chav Dalet. And in the next section of the Tshuva, Rav Moshe is going to go on to allow up to two women to daven in a section of the shul when there's no mechitza, but that's not our discussion for right now. Rav Shechter has a different approach. Rav Shechter writes in his Tshuva about when you're davening the outdoor minyanim and there might not be a mechitza and women want to participate. So Rav Shechter in the Tshuva titled V'hayama Chanecha Kadar says, in line with the letter from Rabbi Soloveitchik we quoted before, and what Rav Shechter writes in Eretz HaTzvi, that there is a mandate that men and women not daven in the same area. We see this from Chana and Eli HaKohen, where Chana told Eli that I am the woman who davened not next to you. Specifically, say Chazal, more than four amos away from Eli, so that it wouldn't be considered with a man davening next to a woman, or a woman davening next to a man. Therefore, says Rav Shechter, if men are davening in a place where there is no mechitza, meaning outside of shul, then they should be sure to daven four amos away from where women are gathered, because there needs to be a separation even without a mechitza. And the same would apply even at davening at home without a minyan. So, this has been a halachic and a historical tour of mechitzas and how we got to where we are. Hopefully we'll appreciate the Kedusha of our shuls a little bit more and appreciate a greater understanding of our shuls and what goes into our shuls and the role of the mechitza, and have a greater kavod rosh, greater sensitivity and seriousness when we come to daven in our shul.